you want to support independent projects and artists and creativity, go to patreon.com. That's patreon.com.
This is the Daily Tech News for Wednesday, May 7th, 2014. I'm Tom Merritt. Joining me today is Eck Eklund, founder and CEO of HockeyBuzz.com, back on the show. Thanks for joining us, Eck, especially in the middle of Stanley Cup playoffs.
Anytime, Tom. You know, the Stanley Cup playoffs, Gary Bettman's putting him on hold for this, so we're good to go.
Thank you, Mr. Bettman. We appreciate that. You have some sway with him. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I do, you know.
Let's take a look at the headlines. The Verge reports Evernote announced an expanded partnership with LinkedIn for better address book organization and improved business card scanning in the iOS app. And the Evernote fans are over the roof about this, by the way. Evernote's scanner will pull information from LinkedIn as well as add time and place of the contact. LinkedIn, for its part, will start actually directing folks to Evernote for card scanning rather than their own Card Bunch app, which they're actually shutting down July 11th. I imagine you do a lot of business card swapping, Eck.
Oh, yeah. Back in the 90s, all the time. I don't know. I don't remember the last time someone gave me a
business
card. Is
that right? Nobody does this anymore.
That's the thing. I mean, and LinkedIn, it's just perfect that it would be LinkedIn, too, does this. Yeah, I do get the partnership. I'm a big Evernote fan, on the other hand. But, I can't remember, honestly, the last business card that was handed to me.
I still do them at conferences. People always want business cards. And swap them around. And then I'm always like searching around. I'm like, oh, I don't know if I've restocked or ever ordered any or any, things like that.
Well, Sidney Crosby hasn't come up to me and say, this is my card.
It says Sidney Crosby.
So where I am, I don't really deal with that. Yeah, you know, doesn't work.
No. GigaOm notes Google is buying Stackdriver, which monitors cloud workload, especially for customers of Amazon Web Services, which is interesting because Google has been trying to build up its own cloud platform to compete with Amazon, so that's a piece of the puzzle for it. Most of you will not care at all that Apple's VP of Worldwide Communications, Katie Cotton, is retiring after more than 18 years at the company, but this is big news for journalists who have dealt with Apple PR. Apple told Recode that Cotton wants to spend more time with her children. ZDNet reports that HP is the latest to get on the open-source OpenStack cloud platform. HP will invest $1 billion in cloud computing and add OpenStack in 20 data centers over the next 18 months. HP's joining NASA, Rackspace, IBM, bunch of others in promoting OpenStack and promoting the idea of running your own private cloud as an alternative to those Amazon and Google clouds I was talking about earlier. You can insert your own get off my cloud joke if you're over 30 or convert it to a cloud rap subgenre reference for others that are younger. TechCrunch reports Google is buying Apetas. Apetas? APPETAS, a site that helps restaurants build their own websites, even integrating services into those websites, things like Grubhub, OpenTable, social networks like Twitter and Facebook. It's an easy, cost-effective way a lot of restaurants use to make restaurant websites, and Google plans to shut the service down. Ars Technica reports Nintendo. Wii U sales missed fiscal year projections by 80,000 to come in at 2.8 million. Nintendo went into the fiscal year expecting to sell 9 million. But the 3DS sold 12.2 million units, still below the 13.5 million projected. Nintendo also lost money. Lots and lots of money. 46.4 billion yen. That's a third straight annual loss. But hey, Nintendo has three things going for it. It has no debt, and it has Zelda and Mario.
Which is not bad. I mean, you know.
Nothing. No.
I mean, I would not mind having Zelda or Mario in my world. I mean, my son, anyone who has like a small child under the age of 12 knows the power of the 3DS. These are really popular units still. I mean, yeah. 35 million is nothing to sneeze at.
No, 35
million.
3DS is a solid performer, but that's pretty much all they've got right now, unfortunately.
And you know, when you go to these stores now in the mall, the old-time stores, they're really selling tons of Game Boys. That's another thing that's coming back in a big way. Old Game Boy cartridges, all the old Pokemon Game Boys.
Pokemon had a big announcement today. I mean, all the franchises are still solid. It's just the Wii U was such a disappointment.
Wii U is a disappointment. I have a Wii U, and it is so kludgy. It's just difficult to deal with.
And I think I misspoke. I said 2.8 million is what they got. 2.8 million was the projection. 2.72 million is the number of Wii U units that they sold.
Right.
CNET reports on Huawei's launch of the Ascend P7 smartphone. It's a 5-inch Android phone, 1920 by 1080 display, runs Huawei's Emotion interface. But the big feature is the 8-megapixel front-facing camera. Yeah, front-facing camera. With 8 megapixels. It's got 13 megapixels for the rear cameras, but 8 in the front should give you some nice high-res selfies just in time for selfies to become passé, which is why Huawei made up a new word to describe group selfies, like the one that Ellen took at the Academy Awards, called groofies.
Lord, Tom, this is crazy. I mean, first of all, there's only a handful of people in the world that would want 8-megapixel selfies. And those people have professional photographers taking pictures of them. So groofies?
Groofies. Huawei would like you to call those groofies. Good luck
with
that. Huawei. The phone will be available initially in June in dozens of European and Asian countries for a price of €449. That's about $625 US, unlocked, and it will come to the rest of the world shortly thereafter. The Verge passes along data from a United Nations ITU report that the internet will have 3 billion active users. That's about 40% of the world's population by the end of this year. Active means they actually used the internet once within a three-month period, not just had access to it. 3 out of 4 people in Europe will be using the internet by the end of the year. That's 2 out of 3 in the Americas, 1 in 3 in Asia and the Pacific. And in Africa, 1 in 5 people will be online by the end of the year. Mobile phones subscriptions should reach 7 billion by the end of the year. And that's mobile phone, not internet phone. Internet subscriptions, mobile internet subscriptions should be up to about 2.3 billion by then. Here's a new compelling reason for 3D printers. Makeup. In Gadget reports, mink was demonstrated by Grace Choi at TechCrunch Disrupt. You can pick a color from anywhere. Anything you can get on your computer, as a YouTube video, an image on a website, anything, drop the hex code into Photoshop or Microsoft Paint, pretty much any image manipulator, and then print to the Mink device, which 3D prints a fresh batch of makeup for you. The printer should launch at around $300, and Choi says the material for printing should be pretty cheap. We'll see. Keep an eye on gracemink.com, though, if you'd like to know more.
So I misunderstood this because I thought you would lay underneath the extruder and the makeup would be slowly dripped onto you at incredibly hot levels. And I thought that was a bad idea just from having a 3D printer. But now I realize what's going to happen is when my wife wants her lipstick, I'm going to be leveling the 3D printer top to get it at major. I don't know.
Jesus.
I don't know. I mean,
yeah. I want a new shade, but it's going to be like color printers. Like, honey, I need to print my lipstick, but we're out of green. You know, yeah. We need to get a new green cartridge.
Like, oh gosh, I got to get another green cartridge. You know, yeah. It just seems like another thing to do.
It seems like that lipstick printer is always out of materials. That would be really cool. I bet somebody's going to hack this thing to print right on your face. And then there's
no question. I mean, that would be awful. God awful painful. God awful painful, Tom. If you've ever played around with a 3D printer and had one of those things fall on your hand, you don't want your face under there. That's just, that's permanent. That's called tattooing.
That's the Mink 2. Well, that's the next rev. IO9 reports on a team led by Mark Vogelberger at MIT using a network of supercomputers to create the Illustris simulation, which models how the universe expands, how galaxies are formed, and the mechanics of how stars and black holes are formed. It's one of the great ways that they can test current cosmological theories. Also, it looks freaking amazing. And the results of the simulation will be detailed in an article in Nature coming out tomorrow. You can see it in action and find out more about it at their website, illustris-project.org.
Yeah, this is just all I have to say about it is wow. Awesome.
Yeah, you could lose half a day or more looking at this thing. It's incredible. Time now for some news from you. These are things submitted to our subreddit, dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. Some of the things in the main part of the headlines are submitted there as well. But I like to highlight these particular ones because it's usually stuff I didn't see otherwise, or they're getting a lot of votes. SP Sheridan had our top story on the subreddit today. Boy Genius report that Al Franken, my friends, has made a video promoting a website called NoSlowLane.com. The U.S. Senator is trying to rally opposition to those FCC regulations you you've been hearing about that would allow commercially reasonable traffic prioritization. He uses Google Video versus YouTube as an example of the open internet working to make a scrappy up-and-comer defeat a behemoth incumbent, because Google Video, if you remember, kind of sucked and YouTube was better. And so then Google bought YouTube and killed Google Video. And YouTube might have never got off the ground, Al Franken argues, if it had to pay commercially reasonable video rates to a bunch of ISPs.
Yeah, he makes a good point. He definitely makes a good point. And having being a provider of content like you are, this definitely freaks me out for sure. And it should freak people out who do this and future people who will do this, which is going to be a lot of folks, you know. So this is we live in a creative world. This is the wrong way to go.
Got a technology review article about venture capitalists. We're going to talk about that in a little bit, too. TM204 pointed out that app.net has good news. They're profitable and self-sustaining thanks to paid subscriptions for the social network. App.net will continue to operate normally on an indefinite basis. It all sounds good unless you're an employee, because they're getting rid of all their employees. That's the bad news. App.net cannot have any full-time employees, including their founders. Their founders are no longer going to be paid by app.net. They're going to get by with contractors, and they're going to be open sourcing a large percentage of the app.net code base.
A lot of people are self-sustaining without employees, Tom. A lot of companies become very self-sustaining.
But then they lose the product. See, app.net's clever that way.
Yeah.
Teching Noob gave us the Verge story that Russia's president signed a law requiring any blogger with more than 3,000 readers to register with the Roskomnadzor, Russia's media agency. The law covers microblogs and social networks as well. So if I were Russian, I would have to register because I've got more than 3,000 followers. Registered writers will be responsible for fact-checking. They're forbidden from harming the reputation of a person or group or hiding or falsifying information, quote, of general interest. Writers will also be required to publish their surname, initials, and email address.
It's one of those things that starts off like, okay, that makes sense. Sure, they should be accountable like all other writers, you know, and then you get to the falsifying information of general interest and you realize that could be just about anything. And yeah, that's real trouble. And Russia doesn't exactly have a great track record. So this is pretty terrible.
Mike P. Kennedy submitted the Verge story that the U.S. Navy announced the Navy e-reader device, abbreviated, as you might have guessed, as NERD, Navy e-reader device. It's an e-ink tablet that doesn't have any internet, doesn't have any removable storage. You can't add or delete things. It comes preloaded with 300 books that will never change. And that's because the Navy doesn't allow devices like iPads that have cameras or emit signals that could be detected. But it's a way to give you a tablet on a submarine without having to risk any detection.
If there was ever a doubt that NERD was cool, the Navy now is using it as an acronym. I mean, that's comes a long way since I was a kid.
There's only
know.
300 titles selected by the Navy library, and it's called NERD. That's like they're trying to get people to not use it.
Exactly.
I don't know. All right, that's a look at the headlines. Thank you, headlines. Time for our plug of the day. In the newspaper business, they call this an advancer. We got some advanced knowledge. Did you know that every Thursday, our very own Molly Wood, well, ours in our hearts anyway, has a big article/video combo in the New York Times? If you didn't know that, well, we're going to tell you now. Check out all of her excellent videos and columns at nytimes.com/machine learning. You can also read her breaking blog posts at nytimes.com/bits. Jenny tested out a bunch of the links in an incognito window to make sure they're free, but you could subscribe to the digital version of the paper to tell them that you want to keep Molly Wood hired and paid. And all of that. Check it out. nytimes.com/bits and nytimes.com/machine learning. That's Molly's column. All right, Eck, let's talk a little bit about those fast lanes that Senator Franken was talking about. Technology Review did an article saying there are already venture capitalists saying that they are not as excited about investing in certain types of startups because of the potential cost of a fast lane. Brad Burnham, managing partner at Union Square Ventures, says his firm will now stay away from startups working on video and media businesses and also avoid investing in payment systems for mobile wallets, which require ultra-fast transaction times in order to make sense. He says, quote, "This is a bad scene for innovation in those areas." So it's already having a breaking effect and hasn't even been implemented yet. Gillis Cashman, a managing partner at MC Partners in Boston, who funds broadband providers, has the opposite view, says, look, this makes sense. we got to charge extra to big content providers because, quote, carriers have to spend a lot of money upgrading networks and pushing fiber deeper into their networks. If you keep reading the Technology Review article, though, Rob Ferris, a research director at the Berkman Center for Internet Society at Harvard, notes that broadband providers have typically had very high profit margins. That's pretty well documented. And he says you can't credibly argue that consumers aren't paying enough for access to maintain higher bandwidth services, especially because increasing capacity, we like to think it means tearing up the roads and laying fiber. A lot of times the fiber is already laid. It's just hooking up a house to fiber, or sometimes you don't even need to lay new cables at all. It's just adding more capacity at an interconnect and adding a little bit of connectivity or upgrading hardware or the software that runs that hardware. So he's like, they want to exaggerate the cost and make everything sound like it's laying new cable. As somebody who works on the internet, as I do, I'm curious what your take about this whole controversy has been.
It's many-folded. But to start with what you just said there, which I really like, think is fascinating, is the fact that, you know, what does any of this cost? We still don't have any idea once the fiber's laid, what any of it costs. And they've been trying to make it cost something for a long time, and this feels like more of that to a degree. It reminds me of, you know, when I was dating my wife and she was living in Sunnyvale, California, we spent $350 a month on phone bills, you know, and then a year later we could get $19.99 unlimited phone. You know, it's crazy. So that's the one part of it that really does bother me. As a content provider, though, like yourself, I definitely could see us being squashed by bigger companies or having to play the game, which reminds me of the record industry again, when I was in that. So that kind of messes me up too, because the wonderful thing about the internet is that we don't have to go through a middle person to get to the viewer or the reader. And that's important. And that is why we have this great diversification of the internet. Otherwise we wouldn't have it. And it reminds me of these guys feel like the record industry to me, trying to grab onto it.
Well, there's an argument to be made that the internet has always had bigger players that invest more money that then you can buy into. And so, you know, having a YouTube that pays for the fast lane wouldn't necessarily mean that you couldn't take advantage of a service like YouTube, like I'm doing right now to stream my video. But I think what bothers me about it is not necessarily even that they're charging. I don't like that. I feel like it's not the way the internet's supposed to work. And so when I start thinking, well, then why is it happening? If that's not the way the internet's really supposed to work, if it's supposed to balance out better than that, there's a couple things in my mind. One is the thing that I've harped on for weeks and weeks and weeks, which is we don't have any competition. We can't go across the street to five other providers and say, okay, which of you guys isn't charging for a fast lane, which means that I'll get access to all of these great innovative services that this other company is clamping down on. It's trying to turn it into cable television, where you know, maybe not everybody has access to all the good video feeds, right? If we had competition, then I feel like that would work itself out. But the other part of it is, I feel like this is a temporary situation. Remember, the internet is not telecommunications. It's not routing a call from one person to another. It's constant traffic. And I think the reason Netflix hired a BitTorrent expert, or at least advertised that they were hiring a BitTorrent expert, wasn't so much to be a thumb in the nose in the face of Comcast, but a real reaction to the idea that, well, if we're going to have to start paying for fast lane access, we might want to look at alternative forms of distribution. And actually, I think that's a natural reaction of the internet, is to say, like, well, let's find a more efficient way to distribute traffic. And I think that maybe over time, we may find that the internet continues to send traffic in both ways as it evolves. Right now, we're kind of imbalanced in that a lot of traffic is going in one direction, at least in this little corner.
That's great. I completely agree with you on that one. It's definitely the case that we're imbalanced at this point, and that the way they're thinking about it is very imbalanced. And the way they're thinking about it suits them. So you're right about the fact that the internet by its nature is an innovative situation where people will try to find ways around where we will find ways, and people will just literally hack through this, perhaps, into, you know, that's the other option, right? That they'll never be able to control it. No matter how hard they try, no matter how much they want to build their business model, they won't be able to control it. And that's the hope for me. And I kind of firmly believe that could happen, just from talking to people that I know that, you know more than I do about the, how the internet works, that you can hope that there will be ways around this.
Yeah.
And we'll figure it out.
And the other thing is, it won't even necessarily be Netflix figuring out a ways around it. It may be us getting new devices that send more information out. More and more average users are getting devices that do upload. And the ISPs are all built on this idea that we're the ones getting all the traffic. Well, if they push that too far and all of a sudden the landscape changes and their customers are sending up traffic, then the transit providers and the Netflixes of the world are going to start going, well, now you got, under your own logic, I guess you own up, you gotta pay us for a fast lane for your customers. And that brings me to the LG fridge article that was in the BBC today. I talked about it on the morning stream today. It's a home chat appliance where you can send text messages using the Line app to a refrigerator, a washing machine, and an oven. The refrigerator is the one that makes the most sense, I guess, which is a wide-angle camera so you can look at the shelves while you're at the grocery store and find out, like, oh, are we actually out of peas? I don't see any there. But then the washing machine, it's like you can remote start it and get real-time updates, but I don't really care other than I'm done.
I mean, the oven's just a pain in the neck to deal with. You know that. I mean, you don't want to be texting the oven. The oven just doesn't know what the hell it's talking about.
All you can do with the oven is preheat
everything I say.
Yeah. It's not going to go get the fish sticks out of the freezer and put them in itself.
Right. I mean, the refrigerator just never. I mean, I can see that now. You know, if I send a text out to my wife and it frightens me that I feel this way, but then she doesn't text me back in that 15 minutes, I'm like, is she alive? That just messes me up. So now if the refrigerator's not texting me, I'm at the market.
What's wrong with the fridge?
I don't want that stress.
Yeah.
I don't want that.
Obviously, more of the upload that I'm talking about will be cloud services and backups and stuff. But there are going to be things like this happening. Yeah. I don't know that this is the one that's going to take off. But you were pointing out Astro Teller, head of Google X, was given a keynote at Disrupt New York earlier this week. And oddly enough, for a guy who's working on special projects involving self-driving cars and stuff at Google, he was saying we actually need less technology.
It was interesting. First of all, Astro Teller is an awesome name for what he does, you know.
Definitely.
No question about that. But what he said is, you know, we're excited about how technology can be used to get technology out of the way. You know, and that's the kind of thing that, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And having spent time with friends on an Amish farm in Pennsylvania, I love getting technology out of the way. For as much as I love technology. But if that is really getting technology out of the way, Google Glasses is not getting technology out of the way. And I think we're far off from getting technology out of the way. I just don't get the concept of it, and I think it's wonderful, but I think it's so far away that it's hard for me to perceptualize.
Getting technology away doesn't mean not using technology either. I thought that was the key to it. He pointed out that our anti-lock brake systems, which are on the predominance of cars now, don't actually work the way we think they work. You don't press a pedal and it applies the brakes. You press a pedal and it sends a signal to a mini robot that applies the brakes. He's like, that's technology, but it's out of the way. We don't think about it. It just happens and it works.
And that's awesome. And I completely agree with that. Wearables, though, are hard to imagine ever getting out of the way for me. Like, you know, that's and so I know he worked, you know, he's doing this while he's talking with Google Glasses as he's giving the speech, and that technology is not out of the way. As I'm looking at him, you know, and I have Google Glass myself, but as I'm looking at him, I can't help but realize this is a man wearing Google Glass, which I like the idea of it, but I don't know if it's ever going to be a product.
Got to start somewhere, right? Maybe it's not. Right. Maybe it doesn't end up being glass. Maybe it ends up being something else. But what they learn there leads to some.
And I think that that's great. And I think that the fact that they are thinking about this is wonderful. That they're thinking we got to get technology out of the way, because we do have to get technology out of the way. There's no question about it.
Yeah, because these fridges, these are still technology in the way. Like, yeah. I have to tell the fridge everything I have in there for it to actually know, like, if things are expired and all of that sort of thing. That's not getting technology out of the way. The fridge that can actually just know everything without me doing anything and then send me a text message that shows up on my implanted smart retina in my eyes and says, buy eggs while I'm at the store. And I'm like, oh, right, I got to buy eggs. That's technology getting out of the way.
Right. And I think any of us who are kind of who love getting the products first, like I do or you do, we all like these things. We really understand this because we've all been at the beach or whatever showing people something. And, you know, then they're just like, wow, that's really complicated. Well, no, it's not. You just do this and then it does
all
this.
All you have to do is, yeah.
We've all been in that boat, right? And people don't really start using it until it just really works. Yeah. And but we like to be in the I love to be on the testing of that. But I know what that feels like when you just can't get this to link to that. And you're just, you know, that's in the way.
All right, let's take a quick look at the calendar. Today is World Password Day, a day dedicated to promoting the use of strong passwords, the creation of good habits when it comes to choosing passwords. You may want to change up some passwords today. So you can find out more about that at net-security.org. Also, tomorrow, May 8th, we've got Q1 earnings coming from NVIDIA and Priceline. Kingsoft subsidiary Cheetah Mobile files for an IPO on the New York Stock Exchange to raise $300 million tomorrow. And here's some breaking good news about calendars. Only took 90 minutes to fund the Kickstarter to bring upcoming.org back to life. Do you remember Upcoming? The terrific arts and tech calendar site? Yahoo bought it back in 2005 and then kind of ignored it and sunsetted it in 2007. Finally, Yahoo allowed Andy Bio, the site's original creator, to buy back the domain. And then today, 90 minutes afterwards, he launched the Kickstarter and it was funded. Jenny writes up the calendar each day, is very happy about this. So yay. Yay to upcoming.org.
Good stuff. Awesome.
Yeah. Our pick of the day comes from noted Google fan Vance McAllister. He's been in the audience, I think, from the Buzz Out Loud days. He says, as you might guess, my pick is a Google app, but one that tends to fly under the radar despite doing one simple thing very well. Although I am a dedicated Evernote user, he says, I have been finding myself using Keep more and more without any overlap. Whereas Evernote is my digital file cabinet, I use Keep as digital post-it notes. It's fast and easy to pull up on a phone or computer to jot down a name, a number, create a quick list, or anything that I need to save for later. Then, just like a post-it note, that information is usually used and discarded. Anything important enough to keep still goes into Evernote, but I'm not cluttering Evernote up with these small temporary bits and pieces. The Keep interface on Android and iOS is clean, simple, and attractive, and there's even a standalone Chrome app for Windows and Mac, in addition to the web interface. Since it's free and available on every platform, I encourage folks to give it a go. Thank you, Vance, from the increasingly hot California desert. Have you tried? I haven't tried Keep since it launched. Tried it a long time ago and then I forgot about it.
Actually, same here. Yeah, I use Notes for this. I don't have an iPhone anymore, but all my iPad notes and my Mac notes. Notes are the same. That's what I use before I go to Evernote. But I think this is great.
I kind of use Simple Note in a way for stuff like this. Right. But good reminder to try out Keep. Thanks, Vance. DailyTechNewsShow.com/picks for all the picks. A few messages to get to. Jim in Fort Worth, Texas, which he says is kind of like lovely Cleveland, but more to the south and slightly to the west, says, on the subject of Chrome OS devices, I've been selling Windows 8 devices at Office Depot since it came out, and man, nothing has pushed the adoption of Android tablets and Chromebooks like Windows 8. They're impossible to screw up, immune as Linux to malware, which is not to say they're entirely immune, but they're better. Dead simple to use, and especially if the owner has an Android phone, easily integrated into their tech universe. Just download Google Chrome on your current machine, take it for a test drive. It all works the same. For the more advanced user, a full Linux install can be sideloaded for more complex tasks. So if you're 30-ish and get together with your siblings next holiday and the subject of dad's Windows XP machine comes up, consider carefully who wants to be dad's tech support for Windows 8 and get a Chromebook or a Mac. I'm just hoping that there will be a 17-inch machine to take the place of my 3-year-old Toshiba running Debian before mechanical failure.
I do have to say this, Tom, about this, because it's funny that he says this, because we have on the show that I do, the Hockey Buzzcast that I do, we have a guy, Kevin Allen, who's the USA Today hockey writer, and he's the head of the Professional Hockey Writers Association, and he's been around for a long time, and he's part of what I call the Cranky Hockey Writers group. And we had him on that. We were trying to get him to do Google Plus Hangouts like this, and he had never done that before. And it was so frustrating. So I finally said, you know what? I'm going on Amazon. I'm sending you a Chromebook tomorrow. You'll have it. And the next day, bam, he had it, and he was doing a Google Hangout like it was no problem whatsoever. So there is a huge, huge purpose for these.
And so is he using it for the word processing tasks as well? I mean, would be the big hangout.
Bringing it around with him to games. He originally just thought it was going to be something he would just do when he did it, because he does the podcast like 3 days a week with me, and mm-hmm. I was just, you know, getting frustrated with his old rinky-dink computers, and this was perfect for him. And now he loves it. He's always been doing his stuff on Google Docs. It just made okay. He just was amazed this thing existed, you know. And
that's
this
an easy
was
transition
awesome.
For him. Then that's cool. Roxanne, 1010 faithful listener since the CNET days and Buzz Out Loud, has a similar experience, shares her personal experience with kids and 3D printers. For over a year now, my son has wanted to buy his own 3D printer. So for his 12th birthday, I gave my little geek son a subscription to Fab Lab here in Tulsa. He's been 3D printing many objects such as dinosaur skulls, Doctor Who, and Minecraft stuff. When his private school got a grant approved and received several 3D printers from MakerBot, his computer teacher had them talk to him and find out what kids use it for and how. Open source files from others and also sharing his own designs. This made him gain a lot of confidence. Additionally, in addition to having fun. By the way, he has also been coding for a little while in order to make plugins for Minecraft videos and his server, so that he's an example of young kids learning to code like they were learned to write and spell. So he's both those things. He's the guy who's been coding since he was six and building things since he was six. That's cool.
You know, Roxanne, I had the same exact situation happen to me with my son in the 3D printer. We took the 3D printer to career day, and I just showed the kids, you know, this is sort of, you know, I'm not really a technology person, but they said, bring the 3D printer. So I bring the 3D printer, and oh man, the kids' reactions to it was just off the charts. And even though you're only making like a comb or what my son uses it for is to make Lego parts that he needs for building, which is really cool. Like, think about that when we were kids. You needed that two-piece blue piece or whatever.
Yeah. You he might be that. Able to order it if your parents wanted to go through the trouble, but yeah.
He can make that, which is a great use for a 3D printer. So yeah, kids really love it.
Definitely. Alan Char wrote in also, said, hey, I'm a software engineer and I've never been interested in hardware or the Makerverse, but I can testify to the wave of hardware hackers among kids, at least anecdotally. My cousin's high school age son has been entering robot competitions since grade school, and my 10-year-old nephew entered his first competition as part of a team that came in third place. Even the popularity of Minecraft, although it's software, seems to fill the same kind of interest, that building of things. The generation that will build our eventual robot overlords is just growing up now. That's what's going to happen.
Absolutely. Yep. No question about it. The Pokemon Minecraft build is really cool too, by the way. Check that out. That's really fun. Really fun.
Thank you, Alan Char, for that. And thank you, Eck. HockeyBuzz.com, folks, if you're at all interested in hockey, check it out. Follow Eck on Twitter. It's twitter.com/Eklund, Eklund. Anything else to let folks know about before we let you go?
We do a Buzzcast now. We actually are doing video podcasts. We're in the 20th video podcast now that we've done, and we're loving it. It's Monday through Friday. You can check our YouTube channel, so just look for Hockey Buzz on YouTube. And you can find it there, and it's having a great time with it. I've learned a lot from watching you over the years and everybody else. So I'm really loving enjoying doing it, and it's becoming more and more comfortable all the time. So check that out.
Thanks, man. It's great to have you on today. Appreciate you taking the time.
Anytime.
Don't forget, patrons, we thank you as well. Patreon.com/AceDetect or an easier to remember URL, bit.ly/helpDTNS. 3,907. We're almost to 4,000 patrons, folks who said, hey, you know what? I want to make sure this show does well, keeps going and keeps improving. And the more people we get, the more things we can do. So thank you very much for your support. We really, really appreciate it. Don't forget, you can have a voice in what stories we cover, whether you can afford to give at the Patreon or not, at our subreddit, dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. You can email us. Our feedback address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. You can give us a call, leave us a voicemail, 512-59-DAILY. That's 512-593-2459. And listen to the show live at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 1:30 p.m. Pacific on mobile.alphageekradio.com. And you can visit our website for all these links at dailytechnewsshow.com. We'll be back tomorrow with Dan Patterson as our guest. See you then.
Information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.